This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't Bismarck? Wasn't it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you
think.
Our opener.
Could do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening alongside my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. How are you, sir?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 376 of The Mothership. How was your weekend? How are you? It's pretty steamy now. We're getting to this. It's finally kicking in, the steamy time of the year now.
It's awful. I went outside like just to move something from one car to the other, and I started like pouring sweat. So
yeah,
not going to complain too much. It's better than shoveling, but it's still
right
annoying to just be sitting here in, like a heat pump.
Yeah, exactly. And tomorrow's supposed to be... Today was just dry, late, you know, upper 80s. Tomorrow it's supposed to be, you know, typical New England soupy, like 92, and, you know, you pretty much chew the air, so... hung out with little PTB royalty this weekend, didn't you?
I don't know, he's royalty. I would have maybe rolled out more of a red carpet for him. But yes, Aaron George was in town with his lovely family, so we hung out. The families got together. We got some boneheads.
There you go.
Yeah, spent some time together, so it was great to see him. Came down from the Great Way North for the weekend for
cool.
a little trip, and spent just a few hours together Saturday, but it was a lot
nice.
Of fun getting to hang out. Not as fun as Michael Pineda getting beat up by this shitbag Phillies team. That's a little bit more annoying.
Yeah, very weird. They were talking. Al Leiter was talking earlier about his cement mixer slider that when he throws it too hard, it doesn't move, and apparently it's not moving tonight. So
yeah, it's a very frustrating game. Yeah. I did see Entourage Friday. I know we talked about that our last Vintage Roll a couple
yes.
weeks ago. I don't know what I don't remember what we talked about it. I saw it in the write up, so I remember we discussed it.
Right. I remember saying going in. I actually saw a movie this weekend too, but I'll mention it right after we talk here. We said that a lot of people were upset. That, you know, they were disappointed it didn't have more pizzazz to it, and we were both like, well, everyone pretty much should have thought it was a 90-minute episode.
Right, and that's what it was. So. I mean, if you liked the show, I mean, that's what you'd expect. If you're going expecting anything more than that, then you'd be disappointed. But,
yeah,
I mean, it was fine. You had all the, you know, Ian Sloan and, you know, Vinny has his trouble, and can he get through it? You know,
mm-hmm.
or the challenge, and Ari's yelling at people, and...
Right.
Drama's drama. So it was, if you wanted to see all your characters one more time, this is the movie for you. So it was fine. It was a fine movie. I mean, I got to go for free, so made it a little bit better. If I would have paid for it, I might have felt a little bit differently, but it was fine. It was, it is what it is at that point.
Yeah. Two things stemming from that. I was at a Barnes & Noble yesterday, and I was looking through, you know, the new releases and some, you know, various sections, and Ari Gold actually wrote a book.
As Ari Gold?
As Ari Gold.
Yeah,
called The Gold Standard.
There you go.
pretty awesome. I was reading some of it. It's actually pretty awesome. I don't know if I pay full price for it. No, wait till it's a discount deal, but it was actually pretty funny. Saturday, I saw San Andreas, which, of course, is the new Rock movie. Mm-hmm. It was excellent. I enjoyed it a lot. I tell you, guy can act. I'm going to give The Rock his props. And, yeah, you know, it was very good. So I highly recommend it. It was a very good disaster movie.
A lot
good
of
effects.
Rock going on. Of course, his new show started last night.
Yes, Ballers. Did you watch it?
I don't have HBO, but I do have HBO Go. I'll leave that to fans to figure that one out.
Yes,
On their own. So I will be watching this week sometime.
Yes, I am. I'm in the same boat as you. So I have HBO Go and don't have HBO. I heard it's getting rave reviews, and apparently, there was an article today because some people were saying, "Wow, the NFL is being very liberal with their allowing," because you know the NFL's could be assholes sometimes and want to make you pay for everything, but apparently. Because they're not being looked at in a negative light and are being looked at the way they are supposed to be, legally, they cannot ask the producers or the production group or HBO for fees to allow, because I guess The Rock's character used to play for the Dolphins, and they actually had the Dolphin logo and the colors, and it wasn't like some fake team kind of thing. It was apparently
right, because it's historically accurate or whatever, is that why?
Yeah, something like that. So, and the NFL is not looked at in a dark. So legally, HBO does not have to pay the NFL for fees. So very interesting. But yeah, I have not seen. I asked today. I wasn't sure if anybody had seen it, but apparently it was getting very good reviews. So I'm going to look forward to seeing it this week as well. What is not going to probably get a very good review, JR, is what you and I are about to do for the next hour and a half. Because
hey, what is going on here?
According to Sutton, he was in my house this weekend. Sutton moves him around like a chess piece.
He's
so
in your house.
He was in your house. Doo-doo-doo. I'll be watching that tomorrow, actually. Anyway, tonight. Inside the Vintage Vault, it's Little Johnny's Last Ride.
Ugh.
All right. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you No Mercy 2004. I think you and I need some mercy from having to sit through this. Ugh. Some legit gripes. Very few shiny spots, but we'll break it down. Any introductory comments, any thoughts, or do we just want to just jump in the muck?
Yeah, no introductory thoughts here. Well, I guess we could talk about, so this was an interesting weekend in our lives. Of course, I was living in Connecticut at the time. We had come home to Rhode Island for a little get-together, a little gathering of our friends.
Yes, we did.
And got back that Sunday, and that next day was a show. So I didn't end up venturing out. You went. And I have no regrets here 11 years later.
At least I saw it for free. Yes. I saw it at our good friend Mike's house. So.
No regrets here 11 years later at all after rewatching it here. So do you remember the tagline?
No. Absolutely not. No mercy
business
for those
is brutal.
Oh, God. So was the show. I have no idea who the... I totally blanked out on everything. I don't know who the song was. Was there a song?
It was
Seether.
No, well, he doesn't have it here. So, sponsored by THQ's Day of Reckoning. Remember that game?
Yes, I do.
Released for the GameCube on 8/31 in America, 9/17 in Europe.
There we go. October 3rd, 2004. October 2nd, JR, was probably more fun. Can we talk about that instead of this?
Well, Stephen actually also included. Oh, shit, there is a theme here. It's it's just the No Mercy production theme, so just a general theme.
So he did
give some notes here on Day of Reckoning. 30 main roster characters, 4 divas, 5 legends, and 5 non-playable characters. 8.3 out of 10 from IGN, so not bad there.
I don't remember the game very well. I don't remember playing it.
All right, good. Give your notes, and then we'll go to the rest of this.
Okay.
The Sutton Report.
Yes, October 3rd.
Sutton Report.
October 2nd, 2004. Live from England, Delaware. No. Live from the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. We, of course, have been there many times. Do you know history? Do you remember the last time we were there, JR? I want to see if Brainbuster's own Ryan Schmock can out-schmock me. Do you remember the last time we were here?
King of the Ring 01?
Correct. That's right. Your attendance, an even 10,000. Your buy rate, 0.475. And your announcers, right next to ringside, Michael Cole and Taz.
Rocket Buster.
Rocket Buster. jacked up in Jersey, Cole.
All right, so let's go through our championship roll call here.
Yes.
WWE champion, still John Bradshaw Layfield. United States champion, still Booker T. Tag team champion, still Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree. Actually, those are new champions. They defeated Billy Kidman and Paul London on September 9th. We'll talk about more of that later.
Yes.
Yep. Spike Dudley, the boss, still your Cruiserweight champion. Yep. Had some interesting TV returns.
Uh-huh.
Two guys we'll talk about a little bit later. Gangrel and Viscera showed up on September 16th in Spokane. John Heiderich returned on 9-2 in Sacramento, and The Big Show returned on 9-9 in Tulsa. So we'll cover all those later. TV by the numbers, SmackDown had seen 268 episodes, 123 episodes of Velocity, and 18 Impacts. On 9-23, we had our SmackDown 5th anniversary show in Phoenix. Paul London defeated Billy Kidman. Booker T defeated Paul London. That's weird. Spike Dudley defeated Rey Mysterio. The Undertaker, as we mentioned, defeated Gangrel and Viscera. Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson fought to a no contest in a schoolgirl match. Fabulous Moolah and Mae Young defeated Dawn and Tori in a schoolgirl match. Eddie Guerrero and The Big Show defeated Kurt Angle and Luther Reigns. And a question from Sutton. Maybe we can cover it at the end if we get some time. In the 5 years of SmackDown, in his first 5 years, are there any hidden gems? One he mentioned was Triple H and Taz. Champion versus champion match back in 2000. So I can think about that. We'll see how we are for time at the end of the night.
I know that a couple people on Facebook mentioned a couple matches. I believe one of them, JR, you're about to mention at the beginning of our first match. So actually a couple of matches involving this guy in our first match. One of them in your beloved building. So yeah, I'm sure SmackDown. And no, we're not talking about the Iron Man because that's not a hidden gem. That's probably, to this point, by 2004, probably the best match in the history of SmackDown. We're, of course, talking about Brock and Kurt from the year before. But that, again, that's not a hidden gem. That's probably the greatest match in the history of SmackDown to this point.
A little history of Ring of Honor here, as always. On October 12th, we had a Midnight Express reunion. Jim Cornette, Bobby Eaton, Stan Lane, and Dennis Condrey United paid public tribute to Ray Traylor. Halfway through the segment, the Embassy interrupted the reunion.
Oh, love
brought
the
out Ricky Morton, but the Midnight Express got the last word when Bobby hit the diving knee drop and Jim Cornette hit Prince Nana with his tennis rackets. On 10/24, the first confrontation between Mick Foley and Ricky Steamboat. And on 10/25, we had a Punk Joe 2 show. Chad Collier and Nigel McGuinness defeated BJ Whitmer and Danny Maff. And Samoa Joe and CM Punk went to a second 60-minute draw. Another 5-star rating from Dave Meltzer for that one. And our No Mercy Heat, Mark Jindrak defeated Scotty Too Hotty.
Wow. BJ Whitmer was there in 2004?
Yeah,
wow.
Probably the same.
Same hairstyle, too. Yeah, I had a thought and I lost it. Never mind. All right, let's dive in. Oh, we have more?
No, that's it.
That's it? Okay. Our opener, we can have the same conversation about this match and the guy involved that we had in our last vault at Unforgiven with somebody else. Former WWE champion Eddie Guerrero taking on Taz's favorite guy. Who's that guy?
Luther Reigns!
Luther Reigns!
Just do your homework.
Mr. Horseshoe.
Yeah. Ugh. How'd we get here?
Well, on the 9/23 SmackDown, Mark Jindrak had returned and joined Kurt and Luther Reigns in an assault on Big Show and Eddie Guerrero, meaning we had a new member here of the Team Angle, the new Team Angle. It's Kurt Angle, Mark Jindrak, Luther Reigns. Mm-hmm. On 9/2, Eddie faced Kurt Angle in a best-of-three falls match with the bout tied at one apiece. Luther got involved, smashed Eddie in the leg with a chair, costing him the match. He would also assault him further after the bell. Luther would continue to take his shots at Eddie in the weeks leading up to the show. And really, this transition is now complete, Scott. So Eddie's feud with Kurt really put to bed in that match. I think that was kind of meant a little bit to be the blow-off. They'll still tussle here and there on a couple shows, but pretty much it. And easily trying to transition now Eddie to help maybe get Luther, you know, be a spark and have a little bit of feud with him here. So a drop for Eddie, but a big spot for Luther. Okay role, I thought, for Eddie. I guess, I mean, if he's not going to be champion and they want to phase him out of the world title picture, if they have to, this is an awful role for him to help elevate some guys. But you kind of feel bad watching it because he's so good and still deserves more, and just on the opener. And sometimes you're fine with an opener if he, if it's like a big match or a feud and you're just trying to get that. But this is just, this is like a legit opener, a legit curtain jerker.
Yes.
So it's kind of weird to see after the big year he's had to be in this spot here. So as I mentioned, Jindrak is out here with Reigns. Crowd is hot for Eddie. Eddie wrestles Luther down, slugs with him. Crowd cheers him on. Luther uses some power to take over, uses a big press slam. Luther works the back and uses a bear hug and gets a near fall and a nice back suplex. Eddie misses a dive and ends up on the floor. Jindrak attacks him. Luther uses multiple backbreakers, continues to wear Eddie down. Eddie punches his way back into it, attacking the midsection. I thought it was good gusto from Eddie. He really carried himself like a man that knows what he's doing, like that he is steps above Luther, trying to do what he can. Really still carries himself with that presence, which I like to see. Eddie hits the Three Amigos, and then a nice bit where he steals a baton from a security guard by bumping him and nabbing it. He kind of like shoves him, and when he goes to look what's going on, he yanks it from his back pocket.
Yes. Yeah.
Eddie brings a chair in. Luther steals it, but he ends up hitting Jindrak by accident after an Eddie dropkick. Eddie misses the frog splash, but he pulls the baton out of his boot and then hits Luther and hits a frog splash again for the win. Classic Eddie here, and I thought it was a nice touch in a match like this. It was a fine match. Could have had something faster paced for an opener, but Eddie is so good, you kind of give it a pass because it's him. I thought Eddie needs something meatier than this, something more. Luther was game, but he's still really green and worked kind of slow. And something I never had thought of, and not even when I was watching the show, I thought of it. Someone called it out on Twitter that this was a tribute in a way to the Big Boss Man, maybe him lifting the baton from the cop and using it as a weapon. I don't know if there was anything behind that. Just a note one of our listeners passed along. And it was Connor O'Boyle. So I wanted to make sure I get the name right.
Right.
So anyway, I mean, the match was okay. I mean, I didn't. Whatever. I mean, again, we'll give Eddie the pass. I didn't think Luther was too impressive outside of a spot here or there. But I get what they were trying to do, using, you know, Eddie to transfer some heat from Kurt onto Luther and try and elevate him a bit. But I don't know if there's enough there to continue forward with him in any way.
Yeah, this match definitely slogged along at a very unbrisk pace. You know, they did their best, and I think, you know, having Jindrak go out with them kind of, you know, give those guys a little shine. But the match was just really flat, and Eddie pay-per-view debuted his second cool T-shirt of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, of course, earlier in there he had the swank Scarface T-shirt, and on this show he debuted that awesome Latino Heat red T-shirt mimicking the Tabasco logo, which is, I love that T-shirt. That was an awesome T-shirt. But the match is just not, it's not great. It's okay. It's about as good as Eddie could make it. Let's put it that way. Let me ask you. Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, same positions, back-to-back shows. Who's in a better spot in the company right now?
I mean, based on, all right, based on multiple factors. So, I mean, I think it's Benoit. Only because I think Raw is more, you know, is the A show and he's there. He's still a guy that is in the mix in the highest level feud, which is with, you know, Triple H and Evolution. So he hasn't completely dropped out of that yet. That was even the opener he was in. I thought that opener, that's kind of what I was referencing when I said sometimes you could be in an opener and have it be more than just like a curtain jerker. To me, that was what Benoit was in. So it was weird seeing him in the opener, but they kind of did it in a way where it wasn't a big deal.
It wasn't it didn't look like an insult, right, or a demotion.
It just felt more like, oh, man, they have him down there. You know,
right?
Wrestling Luther Reigns in the opener.
Luther.
On the flip side, though, I will say you could argue Eddie's in a better position because the path to the top is a little bit thinner on SmackDown, so you could see him maybe making the jump back up a little bit easier than Benoit would, just based on who's ahead of him. When you look at Orton, that's ahead of Benoit, a guy that doesn't seem to be going away. All the Evolution guys, just look at like Jericho in the mix, you know, and a few others. Whereas on SmackDown, you know, Undertaker's getting his second shot here, but after that, it's kind of thin on the face side. You know, you got Cena kind of up and coming, but I think there's a clearer path for Eddie to still be in the main picture. But I think Benoit's being shown a little bit more respect at this point.
Okay, I agree. I'm just curious your thoughts. The match is it's all right. 13-21. I mean, he was an imposing presence. He put on, you know, a couple decent power moves. There was that, like I said, that really cool inverted DDT off the reverse headlock, and then the baton thing. I mean, there was some spots, but
it was
nothing.
Fine. I mean, it was
all right.
It was fun enough. It just wasn't. Yeah, it's not going on Eddie's compilation DVD.
No, it's one of it wasn't anything really meaty. So Eddie Guerrero gets the win with a second frog splash after he missed the first one in 13-21.
So we go backstage here with a Dawn promo. Well, Yeah, she cuts a promo. Then she walks in on Jackie Gata, who's topless, and starts taunting her, saying, and of course she's topless, but she's covering herself, saying her engagement to Charlie will fail due to all the pressure because he keeps hitting on Dawn, and a real pretty good bitch heel work by Dawn, I thought, here to push that along. So we'll talk more about that feud later, but I liked her in the role here, and I mean, Jackie was kind of useless. She had no idea what to even say, but I thought Dawn was pretty effective.
I was not a big fan of this feud because it just seemed like they were redoing the Tori Wilson feud just with lesser talent, but we can dive more into that when they
kind of, we'll get to it. I don't think it's that close.
Okay. Next up, we have our first title match of the evening, JR, the Cruiserweight Championship on the line, your champion. A lot of people, I remember for those comic book people and kind of people that sci-fi fans, they were calling, Spike Dudley Larg. Larg is the half like goat, half human, because he had that those weird brown pants, and they start in that weird looking Stone Cold 2001 goatee, and he was looking kind of odd, but awesome cruiserweight champion and a great heel. And his challenger on this evening is one half of the FBI, a little Nunzio action, in Jersey,
kind of out of nowhere. So at 9:30, Nunzio defeated Spike in a non-title match to earn the shot here, and it seemed. I mean, think of how far we've. And I'm not going to say for better or for worse, but think of how far we've come or changed since what the Cruiserweight division looked like at the beginning of the year. If you remember back to the Cruiserweight Open and Mania, just a lot more traditional Cruiserweights. And I feel like now we've kind of moved away from that with a guy like Spike. You know, we saw the Jackie stuff earlier in the year, Chavo Sr. So we've had some mix in with Ray, but otherwise it's been a lot of this where it's non-traditional cruisers.
Right.
And Nunzio, you know, him and Spike are cruiser weight based, but not style based. So they kind of dust off Nunzio and throw him in here just to mix things up. The boss angle continues, which I think has been great still.
Yes. Yep.
Dudleys are still backing him up. It's a great touch. Spike has this awesome heel sneer and confidence going on with his brothers behind him. Nunzio's still working the FBI gimmick. He's got Johnny Stamboli with him. Back basic start with Nunzio frustrating Spike and Spike regrouping on the floor. The story and commentary really pushed how Spike's shaking confidence may be a factor here because he lost to Nunzio on TV. So while he has this outwardness of being really cocky about it, they're wondering if that loss is in his head at all. So Spike tries to bail again. Nunzio dives over the top on top of him. Devon shoves Nunzio off the top to finally stop him. Dudleys continue to run interference constantly to help out in between Spike working the neck. Nunzio comes back with a flurry of near falls, with Spike barely surviving. Nunzio blocks the Dudley Dog, and it gets a backslide for a near fall. Stamboli finally attacks Devon. He snaps. Bubba crotches Nunzio on the post, and Spike steals the win. Match, again, was nothing special, but I really like the angle and character progression with Spike. I thought this is the freshest the Dudleys have been in a long time, with just all the interfering and protecting Spike at all costs. And I thought Nunzio was fine. Not a lot of heat behind it, which hurt things. But I think what maybe helped in a way, or at least the goal I think of this whole thing was really just to get the Spike character over more. So they almost didn't give a shit that Nunzio didn't have any heat and wasn't a real threat. You know what I mean? I feel like this is just an exhibition to hammer home what a bunch of douchebags the Dudleys are becoming, that they are constantly interfering, that Spike doesn't win without them, that he's an asshole, he's controlling them. So I think that was the whole point of this. So I don't think it was ever meant to feel like a legitimate challenge.
No, and Spike's just been top notch. I mean, he's had that. He's got the heel sneer, and he's growing his hair out crazy. He's kind of a cruiserweight version, I have to say, of and I mentioned the goatee, but kind of like Stone Cold in 01, just looking pissed off and angry, but not like hero pissed off, like just like a miserable, you know, creep.
Right.
And I think that's been fantastic. And as for Devon and Bubba Ray, I still think they're really flat, and I still think they're. But this, at least, there's a change of pace from just, you know, let's stick them in the tag title picture again. And I mean, I know those heels as champions right now, but they could have turned them face and wanted to be stale about it. But you know, this is a fresh feeling for them, and we'll see that they do have work to do later on in the evening. So they aren't. This is not their only appearance, but they definitely looked a little. I don't want to say fresher, but at least putting them somewhere where they could be used. Properly without having to really shake up the roster per se and turn them face or what have you. So in that instance, yeah, I agree with you that they do look very fresh. The match is match isn't bad. I tell you something, I like you were saying about the cruisers and more mat based, and you know, I mean, sure, can Nunzio and Spike fly if they need to? Of course. But unlike the Rays and the Ultimos and those kind of guys, they don't really work that way, even though they have the size to be able to. So I think that was a fresh approach as well. Considering the expectations that this pay-per-view brings, this match probably looks better than it would anywhere else.
Right. Yeah.
But it's still pretty good. One of the few highlights of the evening. I enjoyed it.
I think it's very similar to the opener, honestly. Just kind of there. I mean, nothing that – I wasn't, like, offended or pissed off after watching the match, but I wasn't. It's nothing I'm going to rush to watch again. So that's pretty much where I've been with these first two here.
Exactly. So Spike Dudley retains his Cruiserweight Championship with a win over Nunzio. All right, next up, do we have a promo in the middle here? We didn't, right?
Nope, we're good.
We're going to write the next match? Yeah. Next up, we have a and watching this again today, JR, I actually remember kind of liking this feud or this story. It was actually very unique, and a guy that I... Not exactly the Rick Rude of entrance theme legacies.
I like this feud a lot. Actually, I remember at the time really liking this feud, and I enjoyed the match again here. So tell us the guys.
You mentioned these two guys earlier in the show. They were former blue belt tag team champions, and that of course, Billy Kidman without fleas and Paul London. What happened to them, JR?
On 8/19, Chavo Guerrero and Jamie Noble defeated London and Kidman in a non-title match. A week later, Kidman faced off with Chavo in a singles match. At the end, Kidman dropped a shooting star press on Chavo, but nearly caved his face in when he landed wrong on the rotation. The next week, the announcers told everyone about Chavo's serious injury, and Jamie Noble confronted Kidman, told him that he could justify things however he wished, but he was still possibly ended a man's career. Later in the show, Kidman began to ponder Noble's comments and paused on the top rope, frozen from dropping the shooting star press. The hesitation cost the champs a non-title match with the FBI. On 9/9, Kidman hesitated again and then left the ring. This time it cost the team their gold against Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree. A week later, Kidman claimed he was misunderstood and he didn't want to unleash the SSP and injure anyone else. He claimed the fans were bloodthirsty for wanting to see it. London came out and slapped his friend looking for a fight, but Kidman shook it off and walked away. The next week, Teddy Long told Kidman he would be fighting London and he could not walk out of the match. Finally, at 9:30, London was wrestling Booker T. When Kidman came down and got involved, the segment ended with Kidman blasting London with a chair. Before I talk any more about this, I wanted to get your thoughts on them using the real injury as part of the story.
I no problem with it. If Chavo was going to be out for a while anyway.
Do you think Kidman was going to turn heel anyway? Because it all seemed to stem from that.
Yeah, that I couldn't answer. I have a feeling that because I feel like that other tag team was kind of slapped together as well. So I don't know if they were meant to ever be tag team champions. So I have a feeling there was a little audible called there. Mm. I'm gonna go on record as saying that. Mm. I think an audible was called after the injury. Because it seems like that Kenzo and Dupree, and we'll talk about them in a little bit, were kind of they were on their own singles paths. They were kind of, stalling. But I feel like they just don't seem like the kind of team that the SmackDown writers would go, you know what, we got to put those guys together, make them champions. I didn't see that. But I'll go on record in saying that I think they did call an audible here because both these guys are exceptional singles wrestlers, I think, and very good workers, and I think led to a very fascinating feud. So I definitely think they kind of rolled with it. I definitely do.
The Teddy thing was so goofy when he was trying to talk Kidman into doing the move or whatever. He's like, Billy, the fans want to see the shooting star press. They're like, don't worry, they just caved the guy's face in and your own this really crazy move, and you don't feel confident in doing it. Go do it anyway to make the fans happy. It was a weird like slant for a face GM to take. You know what I mean?
I know. I agree. Almost like everybody else were heels and he was the face, and then somehow they found a way to re-spin it. It was very strange. So go ahead, and now these two meet in the ring face to face.
They sure do. I thought it was sad too to see the team split. They've been so great. It almost felt like a split for the sake of the split, and maybe that goes back to your point of it not being completely planned. But that said, I was into the feud. Kidman starts to doubt himself, like we mentioned, and then kind of embraces it and goes heel. Kidman is accused of being a quitter. Pretty good story, even though the split was sad to see. London's ready to go. Kidman has become more calculated, less kind of riskier. London starts the match with a baseball slide dropkick. He stays aggressive, clubbing away, trying for covers. Kidman's all out of sorts early on. gets worked over by the Focus London. Kidman turns it around on the floor. Back inside, he punts London stiffly in the face. Kidman sends London flying into the post midsection first and then works the ribs using a seated abdominal stretch and a surfboard. London tries to punch his way back in, but Kidman catches him with a gutbuster. London comes back with an enziguri, but Kidman blocks the BK bomb for a near fall. Kidman cuts comes back again with a drop kick, cuts off another comeback, I should say, with a drop kick, mm-hmm. and starts to head up top before walking away, kind of like Ultimate Warrior WrestleMania 7.
Yes.
He struggles with himself and then comes back in and heads up top, but London comes back with a super kick. London tries for a shooting star press to rub it in, but Kidman gets his knees up and counters it. Kidman then heads up and crushes London with a shooting star. London starts bleeding internally. Nasty-looking blood is pouring out of his mouth. And, of course, Kidman gets the win off of that. And I thought some shaky stuff in the middle, but I thought the story was really well done. I thought the finish was strong. Another, you know, base for another Kidman push. Kidman cuts a promo on the crowd. He says it's their fault for making him do the move and injure London. And then Kidman snaps and hits another one while London is strapped to the stretcher, which I thought was great. Very good heel development. This is my favorite match of the night so far. I thought both guys looked good. I thought the story was well executed. And I think Kidman, if you look at this match in a vacuum, you'd say, oh, man, this guy's got some legs as a heel now. You know, it's being an asshole that kills people with his finisher.
Trust me, as we've been doing the vaults since he debuted or since he came in, I've been a huge Billy Kidman supporter. And this is a perfect example why. Because as we've said about cruiserweights and cruiserweight sizes, Billy Kidman's never been not ideal. He's never been the typical cruiserweight size guy. He's a little bigger. He could, you know, I think he could be a legit TV champion, or, you know, when he was in WCW, or, you know, he could be the U.S. champion here. I think it was a guy that if he gave him some juice and, I mean, for God's sakes, he feuded with Hogan in WCW. I mean, it didn't lead to very good results, but at least they had confidence that he could have done that. And I think the same thing happens here. And we all know how good London is, and he'll just get better as time progresses. Definitely one of the top matches of the night. I'd like to think this feud would grow more and expand for Kidman. I mean, I think this is, you know, for a show like SmackDown, which, as you mentioned earlier, and you're correct, is that it's very top light.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of room for movement on this show. So,
yeah.
You know, they should give a guy like Kidman a rub. And
beyond the cruiserweights. You know let him go up a little bit. Get elevated a little bit.
Yeah. You know, he could have been
something like that.
He'd be a perfect opponent for, well, we'll mention the U.S. title later, but he could be a perfect guy to fit into that division.
Mm.
Perfect. I think sometimes Kidman gets a little short-sighted because of that. So,
especially here with his, because the knock at him's always kind of been his character. You know,
right.
He could always go, but I feel like he actually has, for once, a pretty good character, pretty good motivation,
mm-hmm.
Some confidence in unconfidence. You know, which is
right.
which is a weird thing to say.
Yes.
But,
yes.
Yeah, I mean the way he destroyed his partner, it almost felt a little, you know, Sean and Marty in a way. Like it mm-hmm. felt like London was sacrificed to get Kidman over.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if they go anywhere with it, but it felt like they were setting him up for something decent sized.
Right. So Billy Kidman gets the win. Matches again, really good, a little over 10.5 minutes. And he moves on, and we'd like to think that he moves on to bigger and better things. Next up, speaking of the aforementioned blue belt tag team champions, here is our blue belt tag team title match. Your champions, we mentioned the kind of slapped together heel team of Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree, complete with this really cool. I don't know what it is. I feel a lot of wrestlers don't wear navy blue enough, and he had like the tights boots combo for Rene. I thought was pretty cool. I like that deep navy blue.
I'll tell you, I mean, Dupree and Kenzo. Well, I'm gonna set up the match because I want to talk about these guys.
yes,
I have this weird affinity for them.
Yeah. And your number one contender is a team that I really liked a lot, believe it or not, and leads into what I think is a great match. RVD, Rob Van Dam, another floating aimlessly guy, and former Cruiserweight champion. He was Cruiserweight champion earlier in the year, Rey Mysterio. How did we get here, JR? And then we can move
on. Well, pretty basic. Dupree and Suzuki won the titles on 9-9. Rey and RVD have been a team and set up as challengers for a while. And I like the use of these two guys, Dupree and Kenzo, because they're kind of aimless. They both were in the... Well, Dupree was in the mix in that U.S. title feud. Kenzo... I was kind of being moved up the card slowly, and it harkens back to some of our favorite teams that have always been kind of thrown together to see if they can get some direction. They kind of had mm-hmm. the anti-American thing going on. They had a really cool mashup to the theme
mm-hmm.
That I liked, and I think they had a unique vibe and charisma, like in an interesting way that you wouldn't expect. Kenzo started kind of becoming a little bit goofier. You know, he sings the Born in the USA before the match. It goes on a little too long, but, you know, making fun of Bruce from, since they're in Jersey. But I thought they had this weird, like, I don't know. Like, they know they suck, but they embrace it and don't care.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know they both are green and they're kind of learning it and figuring it out. So there's almost a charm to it that they hear these two young guys, a little bit aimless, a little bit sloppy, a little bit green, but they kind of clunk their way through these matches. But they're, you know, they're kind of endearing because of how hard they're trying. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. So they're trying so hard that it makes you kind of enjoy them in a way. I don't know if you get the same vibe for them. It was like two guys going out there. They do whatever it took. They didn't give a shit. They were kind of goofy. They worked hard, and it made you kind of root for them in a way.
Yeah. Believe it or not, yeah. It's really funny that we're kind of on the same wavelength about these two guys, because in an odd way, you almost think they're like baby faces just being goofy. Yes, they mock the boss. They're in Jersey, and they're sings Born in the USA, and you have two, you know,
Born
Japanese guy and a
USA.
French.
But then he just kept saying it like that.
I know.
It was funny.
So weird.
But it
did go
went
a little
on, like,
too
long. Five times too long. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
He should have stopped, and he kept going.
Yeah. But I dug the vibe too, even though they were probably slapped together, and obviously, in my opinion, I think they got the tag team titles, you know, kind of by default because of what happened with Chavo, and they decided to do something with the Kidman London feud. But I dug it a lot. I had no problem with it. I thought they were an interesting combination. And taking on two really good workers, I was actually, you know, when this match popped up today, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to this. Because I remember looking at my original comments when we first did this review, and I crapped all over this match. And, well, you do your comments first, but watching it again, I did almost a complete 180.
Yeah, and he also had done a battle rap with Cena. I don't know if that was before or after this, where he had the Apollo Creed hat on and all the US
stuff.
Yes.
No,
and Ray and RVD, I think, again, and we said this, I think, the last time they teamed, it's depressing in ways, but it's also good because it at least gives them something to do, and they're pretty fun together and they work well together. I just wish they were positioned more as a tag team in the upper echelon instead of fighting for the tag titles or something like that, or elevating the tag titles. I don't know if that makes sense. So it's like, it's cool that they're teaming, but I wish it was more as friends in a big feud like Regal and Benoit were.
Right.
At Unforgiven. Instead, it's more like they're in the tag division.
Right.
True.
Good point.
Anyway, again, good use of both all four guys. Solid action to the mid-card from all four of them. A nice back and forth with RVD and Dupree, trading and dodging strikes and pin attempts. Both tag out. Ray works over Kenzo. RVD and Ray hit a stereo somersault sent onto the floor. RVD gets shoved off the top into the barricade by Dupree. Champs go to work with a basic attack. They focus on the throat and neck. Fairly short heat segment. Ray got the hot tag pretty quick and cleaned house. Kenzo hits a stiff chop to Ray, but Ray comes back, goes for the 619, but Dupree pops in and blocks it. RVD and Ray hit a nice double team on Dupree, followed by the 619 that hits. Kenzo is a really awkward bumper. I don't know if you noticed that. He always is like falling kind of weird. I don't know if it's because he's so tall and lanky, but he never just kind of falls smooth. Again, more to the charm. Dupree chips up Ray during the dropping the dime, and Kenzo hooks the ropes and steals the win. You know, it was a good way to build heat on the champs, but the crowd was really hot for Ray and RVD. Do you think they should have maybe called an audible and switch the belts here? Like, I know you just put them on RVD and Kenzo, so I think they wanted to, Dupree and Kenzo, so maybe they wanted to build to an eventual rematch and switch, but I feel like the crowd was so into them, they could have maybe built some goodwill here if they did a change.
Well, I think that, I mean, as I've documented, if Kenzo and Dupree were just heel, like, audibles, then, and they didn't have a long-term thinking, then screw it, why not? You know what I mean? This match was a lot of fun. I don't know what opinions change over time. I think we've all seen that. And I remember when I first watched the show, I hated this match. And for some reason, I found something different in it today when I watched it again. And it was fast paced. It was active. I don't know. I mean, it was
good. And I think Ray and
very different.
And Ray and RVD really kind of set the tone and set the pace. And again, I think keeping the heat segment short helped that. I think that was a big part of it because he really limited how much offense Dupree and Kenzo. You almost wonder if they should have turned them face and let them work as like a goofy kind of, you know, lovable team and let them.
That's what I was feeling like in that opening promo, you know?
So again, yeah, fun match in a train wreck kind of way. You know, Dupree and Kenzo are sloppy and awkward, but they make it work because they're so absurd and trying so hard. And Ray Alvarez had great teamwork.
Yeah.
And I know where this eventually goes because of what happens, but I do think they were building, and it may still pay off, I don't even remember, but I'm pretty sure they were building towards this feud continuing and switching the titles eventually.
Yeah, exactly. So Suzuki and Dupree, complete with his navy blue French tickler tights, sponsored by Wetzel's Pretzels. They are still your blue, yes, your yes, your blue belt tag team champions. All right. This next match, I think a lot of people are considering is like a co-main event match. I don't know why.
Well, I don't know. I had it. Ja Rule.
Exactly. Feels like this match was going on all of our lives.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's
ahead.
An interesting little feud.
Yeah.
Per se. So on 9-9, Big Show made his big return since being driven from SmackDown back in April. Remember, he chokeslammed Angle off the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
So in a weird way, they've kind of switched roles, even though they haven't really interacted at all. So Angle turned heel and Show has turned face during his layoff.
Mm.
During a lumberjack match between Kurt and Eddie, Show came out and destroyed everyone in his path, making an impactful statement. The next week, Teddy told Show he had two contracts for matches at No Mercy for Show to choose from, one for a match with Angle and one for a match with Eddie Guerrero. After both competitors pled their cases, Show chose to face Guerrero. As soon as he did it, Angle looped the reins, beat Eddie down, and gloated about it. This ticked off Show, who snapped the contract he had signed in half and instead put his signature on the other, choosing to face Angle instead. On 9/23, Show and Eddie teamed up to take on Angle and Luther. After this match, Angle, along with Luther and the returning Mark Jindrak, pulled out a tranquilizer gun, shot Show with a dart, leaving him unconscious. Angle then grabbed some hair clippers and shaved Show's head. The segment was very well done, and the freeze frame of a crazed Angle holding up Show's limp bald head became an iconic one. The next week, Teddy told Kurt he had to face Show at No Mercy, and that if anyone interfered, they would be fired. And I have a question for you, Scott. Who has worse hair? Big Show before this or Armento? Because Show's hair when he came back was atrocious. And I'm so glad they did the head shaving. Because
I think Armento wishes his hair went under his ears.
it was brutal.
If he could get a skullet, he'd be the happiest guy in the fucking world. I'll tell you right now.
It was brutal.
Yes. Oh, God. Tranquilizer dart, and then later on we have other stuff.
Well, so I don't mind the trank dart though. I thought that was fine. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I thought it was good heel work. I thought it was, and they kind of redid the whole goal was to redo the Andre getting his head, you know, his afro cut from the Heenan family, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole, and Cole even does the same line, raped of his dignity.
Yes. I don't know.
You didn't like it?
It just seemed weird. I don't know. It just seemed weird. I do like the shot of Kurt holding up his head. That was good.
Well,
but
that was one too where everyone realized finally that Kurt was this loader on a roids because like his head, like, you know, the veins throbbing, his head looked gigantic in that freaking picture. If you go back and look at that picture, it's absurd.
It's, It is
how
absurd.
Ginormous his head got.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
But I didn't mind the Trank stuff. I thought it was a fine homage to the Andre thing. I mean, you know, it made sense that it was a giant. His hair, I'll put it this way. Big Show's hair was in such bad shape that he had to shave it. So why not make it an angle, right? Why just shave your head and come back? You might as well put it on the line, either do a haircut match or do something like this. At least take advantage of the fact that you're going to shave your head, because he looked awful. He had to do something. It takes us back to Kurt in 02. I mean, his hair was getting really thin. He had to shave it, make it an angle.
Right. True. At least he got rid of it the right way instead of just wasting the haircut. But
right. Oh, and it was brutal. But I really didn't mind the Trank stuff. I thought it was well done. I thought it was good heel stuff. I mean, to me, Kurt can make shit like that work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he goes so over the top with it. I don't know.
Like, you know, shooting an elephant at the zoo.
How else do you wipe out this big giant? I thought it made Show look even tougher that it took a freaking tranquilizer to put him down.
Yeah, it's
the truth. I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it at all. So his feud has been raging on. Angle shaved Show's head. As I mentioned, Cole did the callback to the old. Was it Vince that said it? I think it was Vince, right? He said he's been raped of his dignity or whatever. Andre?
Yes. Yeah. It was Vince or Gorilla, one of the two.
I think it was Vince.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cole harkens back to it here. Nice little angle, I thought, added some heat. Like I mentioned, Show chooses to face Angle already. Kurt is slimmed down and ripped, by the way, here. As we mentioned, his big head, but the rest of his frame, too, is a shredded. Kurt tries to grab hold, but Big Show too strong, chucks him around the ring and into the corners. Methodical Big Show attack just mows through him. Kurt gets deliberately countered out and runs off. The crowd is pissed. Teddy comes out, restarts the match. Big Show continues to manhandle Angle. Angle tries to use the chair, but Big Show smashes it back into his face. Kurt rolls through a choke slam and gets an ankle lock for his first offense of the match. I liked that he got no offense in, but it shows how deadly he is that out of nowhere, even though he's getting dominated, he can hook that ankle lock at any time
right. And
all of a sudden take complete control of the match. Big Show powers out. The ref gets bumped. Angle grabs a chair and bashes Big Show in the knee with it. Kurt uses a leg scissors while hanging off the apron. Big Show makes a brief comeback for Kurt, but Kurt gets an Angle slam for a near fall. Kurt gets a Trank gun, but Big Show yanks it away and busts it in half. Big Show hits a super choke slam by pulling Kurt off the top rope for the win. I thought it was a fine finish. I thought Show getting a clean pin helped reestablish him, plays off the heat from the haircut. He kind of had to win here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it hurts Kurt at all because Show is so much bigger than him. And a decent match, I thought, with some different interesting spots. I liked this feud, and I didn't mind the match at all. I thought they worked pretty well together. I thought Show looked motivated again. And for a match on paper that probably looked a little weird, with Kurt in the heel role having to dominate Show, I thought they found pretty good ways to get there.
Okay. I don't know. It didn't blow me away as much as it did you. I thought the match
I'm not saying it blew me away. I just don't think
right.
It was awful.
All right. I don't know. I thought it was a little long. I don't think these two needed, 15 minutes, but I will say the creativity, if there's Kurt's the kind of guy that can, I mean, he's a perfect person to be creative against a guy like Big Show who's bigger than him. So I will give Kurt that. But this match didn't do anything for me. I thought it was kind of slow and dull. I did enjoy the build, and I'll say the Trank dart, as odd as it was a good precursor to this match, but the match just, I don't think it needed to be 15 minutes. It probably could have been 10, and we could have maybe took the last five if they needed to and push it somewhere else. I think that, maybe given, Spike and Nunzio, maybe another couple minutes. I don't think this match needed to be this long. I think Big Show needed a win, but I wouldn't have minded if Kurt won. But obviously Big Show needed to kind of reestablish himself.
Yeah,
at the time,
I think Show needed
off,
a win,
so.
Especially after they cut his hair and everything. I mean, after you do that to him, he kind of needs to get a little bit of revenge.
Yeah.
The feud goes on a little bit longer, but I was fine. I was fine at the finish here. Kurt can absorb a loss like this. Big Show's believable enough that, especially over the last couple of years, I mean, he's been presented, this is like the strongest run of his career so far, so
right.
It's not like he's losing to 2001 Big Show out of nowhere,
Right. No, exactly. So, Big Show gets the win, kind of reestablishing himself. I mean, we haven't seen him since, was he at the Bash? No.
Show?
Yeah.
Mania.
Wow, so it really was since he, Wow, didn't seem like that
Kurt
long.
Off the thing like 2 weeks after Mania, remember?
That's right, yeah. I feel like it didn't seem like it was that long. It seemed like it was shorter than that. So there you go. Big Show gets the win, reestablishes himself, and And Kirk could eat any, you know, at this point, Kirk could lose and win and not matter. But yes, the iconic picture of his gacked up, you know, roided up vein head holding up, you know.
Well, remember the two, they kept using that picture over and over in the feud. Like, they do, like, almost like it was a snapshot of a Polaroid or something. And it was just like Kurt with that big smile on his face holding up Show's head. I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah. I mean, the build was fine. The match didn't really do anything for me. Very rarely does a Kurt match not do anything for me. And this one was kind of flat. But Big Show gets the win. When we take a break, we got three matches left, including two championship matches and kind of a ridiculous six-man tag we'll get into later. We have a U.S. title match, and of course, our WWE Championship match is on the line. First, though, many words, and that is because.
All of my life.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, Tag Teams Back Again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to The Place to Be Podcast, or you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we are back reviewing No Mercy 2004 here on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast. Mm-hmm. Hope you're enjoying the show. Hope you've enjoyed everything that Place to Be Nation has had to offer you over the last couple weeks.
Yes.
The NBA Team Podcast 2015 Draft Preview is up and going. Part 1 went up today, looking at the lottery. Part 2 will be up in the next day or so as well. Mm-hmm. What's my spot here? Okay, a new episode of the Extra Points Guy. You want to tell us about that?
We spoke in German, yes.
I'm going to go over here for a second. Bye.
The doctor and I went over, of course, the two endings of the sport of the spring sports seasons. Talked about the Blackhawks and the Warriors. The U.S. Open was going on, an exciting last hour of the final round. We saw Jason Spieth, who's halfway to the Grand Slam. We even talked a little women's World Cup soccer. And then we talked about...
Did you bring like Mike Tenay in or Lee Marshall in? Remember he's coming to the women's matches?
Yes, we talked. Yes, exactly. Yes, we brought Lee Marshall in. And then he made bad weasel jokes. And then Joel Barnhart joined us to talk a little bit about the baseball season to this point. So check it out. Good extra point.
Weasel soup. reaction show. PTBN's Ring of Honor Best in the World 2015. Will and Dylan brought you that live after the show ended. Wrestling with Optimism returned. Graham and Dan talking to Ed Allen, the name and driving force behind WrestleCrate, a subscription-based service that sends a box of various wrestling-based memorabilia and items out to you. And it's a big grab bag and mixed box, so be sure to go and check that out. Greeny had your weekend playlist. The Seinfeld PTBN series rewatch continued with The Barber, not Chip Roberts, but episode 8 of season 5, Enzo right. Marginaro. We took a look at that great episode, lots of laughs. And lots of good rankings there. As always, Hard Traveling Fanboys did their countdown of the worst comic book dads, and of course, honor of Father's Day. Scott, tell us about last week's main event, if you will.
Yes. Myself, Jordan Duncan, Jason Greenhouse, and Steve Willey recapped Money in the Bank. And then segment two, the doctor came on, Dr. G. We talked about the roads, and we continued our oral history of total nonstop action. So,
oral
fun show.
Vampire.
Oral Vampire, Twilight Porn. Do you know it's funny, before you continue, getting back to the excellent episode of Wrestling with Optimism, have you seen the website for WrestleCrate? Have you ever taken a look at it?
No.
I highly recommend it. It's pretty much like going into your West Warwick house and just grabbing stuff. It's pretty much what it is. I mean, it'd be like random figures and shirts and, you know, winter hats and... You and Jim could put together winter WrestleCrates.
You could put him in a fucking WrestleCrate.
put him in a...
Aaron George, the world traveler, had a great alternative looking at last week's Ring of Honor TV heading into Best in the World. Our What If series, Scott, our next installment went up. King of the Ring winners. So we picked years that there was no pay-per-view tournament and picked who should have won if there was a King of the Ring tournament in that year. That one did not exist. So that's our newest installment of the What If series. We have the next one already in the works. Should be another fun one on the way for you in July. We had the Rewind series continued, King of the Ring 94. That was Ben Morse, myself, and Graham Cawthon. Revisited the 1994 King of the Ring, talked to Art O'Donnell, talked to Owen Hart. Had some interesting different perspectives, I thought, on that show. So be sure to revisit that.
Definitely.
New Pro Wrestling Zupa show, Stephen Graham, was joined by Tim Livingston and Johnny Sorrow, recasting gimmicks from past with current talent. Scott, if you remember last month or so, you on the main event had the pay-per-view card draft with Graham and Greg and Chad.
Yes.
And I gave my report card. I did my full Todd McShay, Mel Kiper breakdown. I went through each and every pick and gave my rationale while I thought it was a good pick, bad pick, and then graded everyone's draft overall. So it was a fun listen. It was a fun piece to do. Mm. So go back and
fantastic.
Check that out.
Highly recommend reading it. It was excellent. Nice job.
Thank you. Russell Very Sellers had a new installment of the Spinner Rack. Glenn Butler's Walk Around the Web. Joel Barnhart looked at whether the All-Star game was still... you know, obviously relevant, but broken, I guess. I think it is broken, and he's confirming that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show, we had a tribute to the American Dream. We recapped Money in the Bank. We looked at the state of women's wrestling, previewed Best in the World, and then Dr. Tom came back yet again, but this time was not planned. Last minute coming in to talk about his friend Dusty Rhodes, told a couple stories, some funny stories, and then Kevin shared his memories growing up watching Dusty in Florida. I gave my memories of Dusty as well. And so we'll be back next week with a new Kevin Kelly show. But that's episode 37, a full tribute to the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. So PlayStation.com, check us out often, every day, all day. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Twitter, Place2BNation. info@PlaceToBeNation.com if you have any feedback, suggestions, or interest in working for the site.
Mm-hmm. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything. Pop culture. Let's go back to the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
Three matches left. Next up, another title match, our third of the evening. This one.
Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
Yes. He's here, too. Our third title match of the evening. The United States Championship on the line. Best of five series. We are at the fifth match. If you remember, back at SummerSlam, this series began. John Cena took a one-match-to-none lead.
And our buddy Sutton here has actually provided us with the full results. So let's see if I can get GoDaddy to work. All right. 1-0 was Cena at SummerSlam, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Booker tied it on 8/24 SmackDown. Cena went up 2-1. I'm sorry, Booker went up 2-1 on 8/27 in Sydney, Australia. At a tour there. Cena tied it on 9/16 on SmackDown. So that's how we arrived at this here point.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this series so far heading into this match?
Very good.
Yeah, you think so?
Well, I know that. Let's put it this way. I think the TV matches were better than the pay-per-view going in. I think that SummerSlam match was flat. But I remember enjoying both SmackDown matches, even with Booker cheating. And I don't really remember that. They really didn't show the whole. I think they just showed a clip of it, right? I don't think they showed the whole match from Australia.
Flat bitch. You can't have that. that wasn't televised. That was just, that was an overseas tour. Yeah, I think they just showed clips of it.
Could it have been better? I wouldn't say that Booker and Cena have bad chemistry, but, I mean, they weren't setting the world on fire. I wouldn't say that these matches are 4.5, 5 stars, but I haven't had a problem with them. I thought they've been okay.
All right, I'll get my thoughts in a minute on that. So final match of the series, working to build cred for Cena. Crowd behind Cena. Cena frustrates Booker early. Cole explains how the series has been very even and how this match could go either way. Booker hits a spinebuster, but Cena turns it back around on the floor using the stairs. Booker hits a big thrust kick to the face for a near fall. Some awkward spots for guys with this many matches against each other. Like, you'd think they'd be a little bit more fluid at times, but I thought they were kind of a little herky-jerky at times for guys that had just had 5 matches within, like, 2 months with each other. Not even 2 months, like a month and a half. They didn't seem to always have great chemistry. Cena hits a fisherman suplex, but Booker maintains control until Cena slugs back into the match. Crowd is pretty flat here. Booker catches a bookend for a near fall. Cena comes back and hits the FU for the win. Really basic. Kind of bland, kind of sloppy. The crowd pops a bit, but they were dead for most of the match. And I don't think the series did much for Cena. I thought all the matches were repetitive. I thought they were all a bit bland. I thought the idea looked good on paper, but the execution kind of fails. Like, I don't think this did what they thought it may do, like the Benoit one did, you know, for him in WCW. I think this was a bit forced, and I think this is just where Booker is at as a heel now, as a wrestler. Like, he's not the same kind of explosive younger guy he was in WCW. He's much more grounded now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that hurts here because Cena is kind of the same way. So this, all 5 of these matches are all really almost the same and really very similar. I don't know. I just don't think it was as effective as I thought. I thought it was all kind of bland and sloppy and repetitive. Like, they all felt like this felt no different than the SummerSlam match. And we don't even get like a hot finish. Like, it just hits the FU and wins. I don't know. I don't think it was good.
I think, like I said, I think the 2 bookend, no pun intended, pay-per-view matches were average. I thought the 2 SmackDown show matches were pretty good. And again, I couldn't tell you the Australian match because I never aired it. But did it have the same effect? Did Cena get as much out of it as Benoit did with Booker? Well, here's the difference. Benoit and Booker were on even playing fields in 1998, whereas here, Booker is the established veteran and Cena is the young upstart. So I do think it's very difficult to compare those 2 series at face value because the situations with the 2 guys were different. In WCW 1998, Booker and Benoit were on even playing fields. They were both young, hungry mid-carders wanting to take the next step. Here, Booker is this established guy who thinks he's smarter than Cena, who's the champion. He's kind of smarmy and heelish, and Cena is this young upstart looking to take the next step in his evolution as a superstar. Having said that, yes, I think these matches should have been better. Needed a little more juice, and we just didn't get it. And I don't know why. Do you think it's because Booker's just worn out as a heel? I mean, he's been a face for pretty much all of 2003.
No,
do you think he's just a better face?
Yeah, I think he's a better face here at this point.
Okay.
But I don't. I think the problem was no one really believed Booker was going to win the series. It seemed like Cena was already kind of at that point. And I think a big part of the Booker-Benoit series was that everyone wanted Benoit to win, like, be established so bad, and Booker was on the up and coming. Like, they were more kind of in an even spot, and it really could have went either way. And I feel like this series, was clearly just there to mimic that one and try and get Cena over. So I just don't think there's much. There's not as much stakes with the fans as there were in that WCW one. That's what made that feud, that series so good, was the stakes with the fans that were, you know, everyone was just dying to see Benoit finally get established. And Booker was this young up-and-comer that fans were really into. And this just feels a little bit more, the stakes aren't as high. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more obvious. Mm-hmm. And the matches just start, you know, the Booker Benoit matches were a little bit more varied. I just didn't think they had that variance here. And I don't think it's their fault. I think they just were put in a position that probably was beyond what they were able to deliver.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. And as much as, again, I thought the TV matches had a little more juice than the pay-per-view matches did.
Like if you had like a Cena Kurt best of five, I think it would have been maybe a different outcome, or even like Cena Ray or something. Like there was other guys that probably would have been better suited. I know that why they chose Booker,
right?
But
you think they chose Booker simply because he knows how to do series?
No, that's.
I'm not saying that against. No, I'm not knocking you. I'm just saying. Do you think they were thinking that?
No, not at all.
Okay,
I think they chose Booker because he had the series of Benoit, and they thought it would. They could play because they did recall that.
So you're agreeing with me then. You think that they put?
No, it has nothing to do with him knowing how to work a series. They did they could refer to him having been in a series.
I see what you're saying. Okay. I mean, you knew eventually Cena was going to win the belt. Booker didn't really need it. I think Booker was just there to put Cena over. I don't think he did Cena any favors. I think the crowd was kind of flat after this match too. Like, I don't think they were totally going nuts that Cena won. Do you think? Or maybe I was just looking at the... Maybe I was just judging the crowd differently. Felt like the crowd was flat after this match.
I thought they were definitely flat.
What's that?
I thought they were definitely flat.
Yeah. And I think... I don't think they got as much out of it. I agree with you 100% in that aspect. I don't think they got as much out of it as they wanted to.
No, definitely.
For that reason. So John Cena regains the United States Championship that he technically never lost because asshole Kurt Angle stripped him of it. And I think that should lead to a Kurt... well, it does at some point, I guess. it does lead to future dealings between Kurt Angle and John Cena. So John Cena, you're once again your United States champion. All right, we get back to we get now to our next match, which refers to a skit backstage we had earlier in the evening involving Miss Jackie and Dawn Marie. It is a 6-man tag. Tell us how we got here, please. Please, for the love of God, tell us how we got here.
On 9:30, the Dudleys were facing off with Rico and Haas. When Dawn Marie joined Cole and Taz in commentary, she announced to the world that Haas and Jackie Gator were engaged, but she also claimed that she and Charlie were having an affair. Dawn and Jackie would get into a brawl at ringside, distracting Haas and allowing the Dudleys to win the bout. This is also Rico's final pay-per-view match. His final record is 3-2. He was released on November 7th, hooked up with All Japan till July 05 when he announced his retirement and return to a career in law enforcement. And again, I thought Dawn was kind of the highlight here. And the reason I think this is different than the Tori feud, that was just like her... I mean, it's still mind games, I guess, but I don't know. Because it was Tori's dad, it was... To me, this is a little bit more dastardly. Like she's saying like that, you know, Haas is basically banging her, and that's... Instead of... Just because Tori's dad is banging her, it's just kind of gross. It's not really any kind of like misdeed. But the fact that she's trying to now break up an engagement to me makes her even just nastier.
Mm, true.
And I thought she fit with the Dudleys because the Dudleys are such assholes and she's such a bitch. And they have the ECW ties. Like, I thought they should have kept them together permanently. I thought it was a pretty good fit. Haas and Rico work well off each other. Still not a big fan of the team, but man, they're fine. Dawn was super hot here. Dawn loves Charlie shirt on. Devon controls Haas, immediately tags in Dawn, who tries to seduce him and then reveals her thong. Jackie tags in and starts a cat fight. Bubba gets involved and yanks Jackie down by her hair, which I thought was a little uncomfortable to watch. Bubba drops to his knees and puckers up for a kiss, but Jackie tags in Rico, who kisses Bubba instead. Kind of weak, like 70s type of humor.
Yeah.
I guess it goes with the Rico gimmick. Rico gets tripped up, leading to a heat segment. Haas gets a hot tag. Hits a nice German suplex and gets a near fall with a crossbody with Dawn making the save. Crowd wakes up for another cat fight. Shenanigans lead to Rico hitting a great moonsault on Bubba for the win, which surprised me. I was shocked that the Dudleys lost clean here, especially to this team. Why not have Dawn just get the pin or, you know, take the pin? Right. Sloppy match with the crowd being only into the women brawling. and just nothing else going on besides that. The delis have been refreshed, but I thought this was a little bit of a waste for them. I think it's a waste for Haas too. Rico, I like Rico in general, but I thought Haas could be doing better than this right now.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's not doing as good as his former partner is over on Raw. This is just a mess. And Jackie's just so clueless. She has no idea what she's doing. She can't ad lib. I don't know how the hell this woman won the second season of Tough Enough. I really have no clue. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
She has no idea. She can't wrestle. She couldn't talk on the fly. Really, all she had was she was hot. That was pretty much the whole extent of it. I did like Dawn Marie wrestling in a bra. She wasn't even wrestling really in tights. She was in a bra, which is pretty hot too. But yeah, I mean, this is where now we're back to. We talked earlier about kind of invigorated Dudley Boys. Now we're back to boring, stale in ring Dudley Boys.
Still not. I don't know. I don't think this is on them.
No, I don't know. I think I've lost my liking for the Dudleys pretty much since the spring. Rico's Rico. There's really nothing you could do. I mean, this whole storyline was just
The Dawn Jackie stuff was fine. It's just the match itself just doesn't really work. I don't know.
No, it doesn't. And Charlie, it's because you're seeing a good worker like Charlie Haas stuck in this you know piece of shit really. While his partner on Raw, Shelton Benjamin, even though he got hurt. He beat Triple H twice on Raw. I mean, you know, he's so much better at stuff that he's doing, and Charlie Haas is just kind of floundering here. And you can't say it has to do with, you know, gimmicks or promos, because at the time still, Shelton Benjamin was also working out his kind of mic skills. So they were both kind of, they both had that as something they needed a kind of some help with. So it's not like Shelton had an edge on that over Charlie. So I don't know. Here was a case where Shelton actually was thriving in the more stacked roster character-wise than Charlie was. Charlie, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, same thing with Kidman, you know, a roster that, you know, has spots for him, and this is the best you could do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. So Haas, Rico, and Jackie win in 8 minutes and 47 seconds. We wish we can get back. All right. Time now for our main event. The WWE Championship is on the line in a brand new gimmick that really does nothing for this match anyway. How'd we get here?
John Heidenreich originally debuted back in 2003 on Raw, but he didn't offer much other than bugging wrestlers and talking about Little Johnny. Little Johnny is referring to was never clarified, and Heidenreich was quickly sent back down to OVW to gain some more seasoning. On 8/24, Heidenreich returned to TV, showing up on SmackDown, Paul Heyman in his corner. Heyman claimed that Heidenreich was his loyal guard dog, and that he would gain revenge on Undertaker as well as the rest of Heyman's enemies. The now deranged Heidenreich would interfere in random matches and read some bizarre poetry, with the most disturbing coming on 9/16 SmackDown, where he pinned Michael Cole against the wall, pressed up from behind against him, and whispered a poem into his ear. It would, of course, become a legendary segment for all the wrong reasons. As he basically raped him against a door.
Yes, pretty much.
And read poetry. The week after SummerSlam, JBL showed up at SmackDown in a giant neck halo. He said that Undertaker had refused to pass him the torch in Toronto and that he would not receive a title rematch. Taker emerged and JBL and Orlando Jordan scurried as Taker grabbed the title and held it up in the ring. The next week, Teddy Long wanted JBL to face Undertaker, but JBL claimed Orlando would take his place because he was unfit to compete. Teddy agreed, but told JBL that if Orlando lost, Taker would win the title, and Taker would win the match, but not the title, as JBL got involved and caused a DQ. A week later, Teddy told JBL he would face Taker in a last ride match at the pay-per-view, with the winner being the first to stuff his opponent in the back of a hearse. On 9/16, Taker showed up and assaulted JBL, but Orlando led the returning Gangrel and Viscera out to help beat up the dead man. Undertaker battled his former ministry charges in a handicap match on 9/23, easily polishing them off. After a tombstone on Gangrel. On 9/30, JBL couldn't find Orlando and ended up losing to Hardcore Holly by disqualification. After the match, Taker emerged on the Titantron and told JBL it was down to just him, as he had eliminated Gangrel, Viscera, and Orlando, who was shown to be hanging from Taker's symbol. I remember the surprise of when the picture of Gangrel and Viscera running down to the ring emerged from the tapings.
Yes.
It was so random to see those guys come back, but I wish they kept Gangrel around. He looked to be in like, decent shape.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But unfortunately, he doesn't. Viscera does stick around.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk a lot more about him.
Yes.
SummerSlam rematch with a questionable finish from there. JBL vowed no rematch. Teddy forced it to happen. Last ride is basically a stretcher match with a car. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah,
you got to put him in the back of the car, and the car has to drive out of the arena. JBL gaining confidence and steam, but still not fully appreciated at this point. Remember, you're still getting a lot of shit for his reign. I think rewatching it, you can see some of it there. Like I thought it was being, I thought he was developing well. His confidence was building well. The awesome random return of the ministry, like we mentioned. JBL solo for this match. Cool Taker entrance as always. JBL attacks the bell, but Taker slugs back and takes over with strikes. He mows through JBL, not slowing down at all outside of a thumb to the eye. But Taker comes right back with a choke slam. The fight spills to the floor, still all Taker punishing JBL using barricade and stairs. JBL smashes Taker with stairs to finally take control. JBL uses the stairs some more, battling Taker down towards the hearse. JBL slowly works over Taker in the ring, but gets caught in a triangle choke and passes out. We go back to the floor when he wakes up, and JBL desperately whips Taker into the stairs to stop the challenge at the last minute once again. That was a nice bump with Taker backdropping JBL off the stairs to the floor. They brawl into the crowd. Back to ringside, Taker hits a tombstone on the steps, busting JBL open, which I thought was kind of absurd since the tombstone's on the top of your head and somehow JBL's forehead gets ripped open. Taker hammers away, but JBL yes. gets a wild chair shot off the head of Taker. Again, a desperate last chance save. Taker hits a chokeslam to the table. Both men are wiped out. Taker carries JBL to the hearse, but Heidenreich pops out, wipes out Taker. Heidenreich smothers him with a chemical and a rag, harkening back to John Gonzalez, of course, drags him into the hearse, slams the door. But before they drive away, Taker sits up and storms out, tries to fight both men off, but JBL hits a clothesline from hell to give him the win. Weak finish, but they had to protect Taker, and it was better than I thought JBL. At least he got the clothesline from hell at the end, more than like Heidenreich actually doing the one that puts him in the hearse. Mm-hmm. I thought it was actually a pretty fun brawl here until the finish. I thought it was time for JBL to move on. I thought this was better than SummerSlam. I thought there was more energy. I thought the brawling was better. I'm glad they did more garbagey stuff. As much as I usually hate the stairs as a weapon, I thought they used them pretty effectively here a bunch of times. That was kind of the weapon of choice. I liked how JBL, every time he looked to be done, he'd get like one desperation move to slow the Undertaker down. Kind of has been the story of his reign.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we get the absurd stuff backstage. Heidenreich drives a Bronco into the hearse after being egged on by Heyman. And the show just finishes so flat and quiet, where basically he just slams into the hearse and like Heidenreich's like all woozy in the truck and we just fade out.
Blood coming out of his ears.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing was weird. They could have done that on SmackDown instead. They didn't have to end the show like that. Or, you know, don't show it on the pay-per-view, but say this happened after we went off the air on SmackDown, show it. I thought it just ended the pay-per-view on a weird note, but I thought this was better than SummerSlam. I thought they worked hard again. Nothing great, which has kind of been the story of the show, but fine. Like, I didn't think it was bad, but I think you kind of had a different opinion, right?
There were a few spots that I did like. I mean, there were some pretty stiff punches. They do kind of, you know, they know each other very well, so they can, you know, be a little liberal, Stan Hansen-esque. I did like the spot where JBL was going to go for the tombstone, I guess, or pile driver on the steps, and Taker backdropped him, and he landed pretty hard. Otherwise, I did not like this match whatsoever. Was it a little better than WrestleMania, SummerSlam? Yes, and I didn't like that match either.
I think the crowd was better just because of the brawling.
I think the crowd was cooked at this point, and the fact that, you know, a good Northeast crowd just didn't have the gas to bring it, I think took a lot out of the match. I thought for one moment during when he was in the ring and his music was playing, the crowd was dead. I thought JBL was just a failure at this point. And I know that he wasn't, but this was the one moment that I said to myself, that you say to yourself, if you were watching it then and not knowing the future, you said to yourself, they might as well just had Taker win here and put this guy out of his misery. Because no response whatsoever, but I think the crowd was just cooked on what they thought was a pretty lousy show, and I think this match did them no favors.
And he's been doing a great job with his promos and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think the build to this feud, the Halo thing was a funny moment. Like,
yeah.
With the cabinet, the ministry, like, he's really working hard, and I don't want to let him off the hook too much, but I feel like SmackDown was a really tough sled to push. At mm-hmm. this time, they were clearly the B show. Injuries had ravaged them. Very thin roster. You know, Taker's great, gets lots of pops, but they're still, I don't know. It's just a tough sell to me. To really pin this on him when you look at the overall state of the show. You know, we want to all give Eddie a pass. and say he was buckling under the ratings, but we love him because he's Eddie. But I feel like everyone dumped on JBL for being this awful drawing champion. But I think it's just the state of the show at this time. I mean, look at the rest of this card. Look at the rest of the roster. They have some talent, but a lot of it's just being kind of mixed in elsewhere. And I think when JBL's reign turns the corner is when we get a little bit more focused. We get a heel goes face. You know, then we get kind of all the top challengers start getting more into the picture. Like, I think things start to take a little bit more shape towards the end of the year. I think here was a tough slog for him. It's tough. I mean, how many guys have we seen get into a feud with Taker at a high level where they get screwed because Taker can't lose clean, but he's not slated to win the feud?
Yeah.
And it's burnt a lot of guys. And I think it hurt JBL here to have this feud with The Undertaker at this point. Like, I don't think he was strong enough. They haven't done him any favors, right? They rocketed him to the top without building him as a heel. So that was the first strike that hurt him that wasn't his fault. Then they have him go over Eddie decisively, which, again, was going to hurt him in the eyes of smart fans, whether they were being objective or not. They're all big Eddie fans. So you're having him, you know, lose, have Eddie lose, you know, three times in a row, basically, to JBL. And then you have this feud with Taker, where it's just a no-win situation because of Taker's, you know, physical
character.
Yeah, his character and his physical, you know, state. It's really hard for him to have, like, a great match with Taker at this point. And if Taker's not going to win, or you're not going to have the supernatural, it's a tough feud to have. Like, Taker's not in the position that he'd be in later years where you could just have good matches with him. Like, he's just not there yet. So,
right.
I feel like it's a really tough position they put him in. I don't feel like they helped him at all. And I feel like they finally start to help him a bit later in the year. But,
And I think that point you made, which was very well put, piggybacks what I said about the fact that this undercard was so awful that the crowd was cooked at this point. And when you cook a Northeast, you've got to really suck to cook a Northeast crowd. Jersey, Garden, Boston, Providence, Hartford. You got to really suck big donkey to cook a crowd, cook a Northeast crowd with the main event. Midwest, Florida, Texas, any other parts of the country, it's a little different because they're not as vocal and vibrant as Jersey, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. Very different. But by the time you get to this match, the undercard has burnt them out. They didn't even care. It just seemed like they didn't care that John Cena won. So yes, your points are all perfectly valid.
I think that just speaks to SmackDown at this point.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Not even just this card. I mean, the SmackDown as a whole, it doesn't leave much excitement. There's not a lot of, not a lot of things cooking. Even though I enjoyed the Big Show Kurt feud, it's still not a feud that captures your imagination in many ways. They seem to have a lot of puzzle pieces arranged in the wrong positions. It almost feels like the 93 in some ways, you know what I mean? Where they kind of had all the guys, but they're kind of in the wrong spots. Like, that's what this feels like to me.
Yep.
But a lot of it comes back to, you know, Eddie's, whatever, not being able to handle some of the pressure, so they had to take the belt off him when he probably could have had a longer run and maybe not lost to JBL until later in the year, or maybe Angle could have been the guy to beat him once he came back. Instead, we're kind of shuffled all the top guys into the lower spots of the mid-card when it's the time that we really need them up top.
Yeah. I've said this, we said this all along, and I said this since the end of 03 and the beginning of this year of Vaults. We loved SmackDown in 2003 because the roster was so jacked. We didn't care if the storylines were as juicy or not. You lost a huge presence on that show in Brock. Really never filled it. You had that awesome crew, Eddie, Benoit, you know, Ray. You had a great core, Tajiri. You had a great core on SmackDown. That mid-card was smoking hot. And the problem was they broke those guys up with the draft and never really were able to really replenish that talent. What they did was they took a bunch of tag teams and broke them up.
Well, and they tried to push some newer guys that either just weren't ready for that position.
Right.
Kenzo and Mordecai. You know, like they tried with guys like that. They turned Booker heel. And again, they have some pieces. Like, you know, we talked a lot about, I mean, to speak to the puzzle being all over the place, look at Ray and RVD. Like, those are two guys that could easily be, you know, instead of doing two matches with Taker, why not have RVD challenge JBL here? You know, that could have maybe gotten the crowd into it, or Ray. And I'm not saying they're not into Taker, but it's just, I don't know. You kind of know when Taker's not winning, and this kind of felt like one of the times, so I feel like you don't get as into it.
Yeah, I think that they got a little lazy. I think they got a little lazy, and I think they thought, well, we put Taker in the main event. It is Taker. He can carry things while, you know, the mid-card kind of, you know, floats in the middle of the ocean without a life preserver kind of thing. Taker is the life preserver to save this pay-per-view from sinking. But you're exactly right. There's a feeling, because at this stage, and this goes back to, and I think this goes back, I don't know if one has to do with the other, but I feel it sort of does. You can go all the way back to, and we just watched this show, you and I, when we're doing our written redos, our written vaults. The 94 Rumble, you were there with Yoko and Taker. I think that match, fast forward 10 years, and in that time, you can tell when Taker is a stopgap and when he's not a stopgap. When he is booked to be the main event, the world champion, and when he's there just to add suspense to a title match that you really know is not going to have a decisive winner or he's going to lose. And like you said, this is the perfect example of that. It was a weird month to have Taker win anyway. It's just things are not good on SmackDown right now. Raw.
And on the SmackDown thing, I kind of want to go back on what I said about it being a thin roster, because the more I think about it, I think they actually have the pieces here. They're just not using them right.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, they still have Undertaker, Rob Van Dam, Rey Mysterio, Booker T, Kurt Angle. You know, there's plenty of guys that they could be doing
Big
stuff
Show.
With. Big Show, John Cena. You know, there's still guys there. They're just kind of disproportionate.
Luther Reigns.
Eddie. Yep. I mean, they're just kind of, they're just kind of mixed up along the card. So instead of having, I don't know, it's just a screwy mix of talent on the show. But they have the guys there that is not really, that is kind of all over the place.
Yeah. And the combination of the crowd gassed from a pretty piss poor undercard, and like you said, the feeling they all know that Taker's really not going to win. It's just a question of how dramatic and how, crazy they're going to make him lose. And as we saw, they had to steal something from his worst match in the history of WrestleMania, of his WrestleMania matches. They had to steal that. So in one pay-per-view, JR, we have storylines involving elephant darts and chloroform. It's just really insane. So JBL retains his WWE championship. You got Heidenreich. I mean, here's another thing. Let's get on this for a minute. Here's a guy that they thought on Raw, he wasn't ready yet, so they sent him down. And then they bring him to SmackDown, and immediately he can feud with The Undertaker. I mean, why do they think that on Raw he wasn't ready, but on SmackDown he is ready?
Right.
Again, another example of what they thought of SmackDown as a show. Oh, yeah, no, he can't, you know, be in the upper mid-card main events on Raw, but, 7 months later or whatever, a year later, no, man, he's definitely ready to be elevated to the upper mid-card main events of SmackDown. You know, it's like,
and
come on.
And sticking him in a feud with Taker, it's like we're back to now just another monster feud for Taker. How are we going to see how he, you know, carries this guy now? So it's a tough spot.
Yeah. No, it sucks. It's not good. So JBL retains, as I mentioned, his WWE championship in a really in an average match that I don't think was going to get any better than what you got.
Right.
So
it definitely doesn't save the show in any way. I mean, it ends up being a pretty, I think, just a mediocre average show. I don't think anything's awful. I don't think anything's good. I think it's just all a series of 1.5 to 2 star matches.
Yeah, if there's a three match stretch, if you want to see something from it and gain an opinion, watch the three-match stretch of Spike Nunzio, Kidman London, and the tag title match. If you watch those three matches in a row, then I think you're okay.
I think London Kidman is clearly the match of the night. I mean, just based on storyline and match quality.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to decide whether JR and I are right or wrong on Big Show Kurt, you can watch that too. But I mean, that's up to you. But I think that three-match stretch, the Cruiserweight title match, London Kidman, and the tag title match are the three best matches of the whole thing. But yeah, Kidman London. Although I like that. I don't know. That tag was pretty good.
Yeah, it was fine.
It was good. So anyway, there you go. No Mercy 2004. It goes off into the sunset, and maybe you'll never have to deal with it again. So, and there you go. There we are.
All right. So we'll be back, Scott, in 2 weeks' time, looking at Survivor Series 2004.
No. No.
You're right.
Taboo Tuesday.
I jumped ahead. Forgot about Taboo Tuesday.
We got a memory. That's a memorable night in our lives, JR.
It is a very memorable night. We'll cover
the history
all.
Of.
So yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks with Taboo. I was kind of looking forward to Survivor Series, but we'll wait a month for that.
Oh, well,
so
well,
2 weeks' time, we'll get to Taboo Tuesday 2004, brand new pay per view offering.
Mm-hmm.
Later this week, Scott, episode 3 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast with myself
yes.
and Will.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be up by week's end. And then next week, of course, we have Kevin Kelly and Main Event. I can already reveal Kevin Kelly's guest, the Ring of Honor referee Todd Sinclair. So he'll be joining us. We'll talk Best in the World, I'm sure, and a few other things as well. So Kevin's feeling good coming off of that show, so we'll look forward
good.
To that.
Excellent. And this week, we have a network special show. That's going to be recorded, is it this week? Yeah, the same night as you're doing Dangerous Alliance.
Okay, that's right. That's right.
So we have a
we'll see what
special. We're not going to say what it is, but we have a special. It'll be a special special podcast will be up this week
podcast
as well.
There
you go.
All right, so we're out. We'll talk to you as a couple here in 2 weeks from, where's that show? Milwaukee?
I believe that is Milwaukee, yes.
So we'll see you in Milwaukee. Until then, everyone take care. Milwaukee.
Kurt Angle dressed like Tootsie. Jeff, well, that's what the song's from. That song that Kurt played is from the movie Tootsie.
Well, Big right. Show dressed like Armento, so what's the song for that?
Y'all gonna make me lose my hair up in here.
When you kiss me, baby.
Your hips, those thighs.
You know, like I know when there's a better day. You're coming, I'm hooked on your love and believe me. And when you hold my body, I know you need me. Wait for me, baby. I've been going half crazy for your love. And I was told that the sex is better than drugs. Been getting addicted, boy, listen. I'm the only piece of the puzzle you're missing. Like when we kissing, bye, bye, bye.
Those eyes,
I love it when you look at me, baby.
Your lips, your smile, I
love it when you kiss me, baby.
Your hips, those thighs,
I love it when you fuck me, baby.
And I can't deny,
I love it when I'm with you, baby.
Shorty, are you really getting bored with me or him? Just though I play a lot of games, I play them to win.
But then again, I'm still young and I'm living my life.
Right, and I'm the type to pull up to your bumper, get your number, baby.
I can only help but wonder,
life would be without
my sweet baby.
Say you're my baby.
Holla if you hear me. You can understand that my love is pain, and that I'm feeling, babe, it's just a woman thing.
It's a man's world, but I understand.
But let's do nothing different, boy, let's stick to the plan.
You be my down ass with your round ass.
I know I'm feeling you.
Like you feeling me.
The way you're warming my body.
Girl, your stare, those eyes, I
love it when you look at me, baby.
Your lips, your smile, I
love it when you kiss me, baby.
Your hips, those thighs, I
love it when you fuck me, baby.
And I can't deny,
I love it when I'm with you, baby.
Motherfucker, you sons of bitch. Ain't none of these niggas real like us. You in the dick? And yes, sir, we here to stay.
right now. Let's get into this mother.